Tonight we're going to be finishing up the topic that we started a long, long time ago about spending money on mitzvahs. Except tonight we're not going to be talking about spending money at all, because the last part of the topic that we haven't discussed is how much inconvenience, well, we discussed inconvenience, but how much pain and trouble one has to go through to do a mitzvah. So a couple of weeks ago we discussed how much one must inconvenience himself. You have to travel from one town to another, and we had the rayas from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in both directions, whether you need to travel from one town to another to do a mitzvah, are you allowed to live in a place where it's going to cut you off from the possibility of doing mitzvahs. So we began a discussion about that. But tonight I want to focus more narrowly and on issues of sacrificing one's health for the purpose of being mekayim a mitzvah. Is it at all necessary, required, permissible for a person to sacrifice their health in order to be mekayim a mitzvah? We all probably heard the story of the Stipler Gaon, right? The anyone who ever went to visit the Stipler knows that you couldn't just converse with him normally because he couldn't hear. They had to write down the question, I guess. I don't know, I never went to visit him, but I was very young. But you would have to write down the question or scream in his ear, I guess. But I think they would write down the question for the Stipler. And the story goes, it's printed in this biography, and they say it's a true story, that when he was in the army in Russia, he had guard duty on Friday night. And the way they would work it is that the previous guard would leave the big fur coat hanging on the tree for the next guy to take. And he had it on Friday night, and it was hanging on the tree, and the tree was muktzah, so he wouldn't take the big coat that was there to protect him off the tree because of the muktzah issue of Shabbos. And because of that night, apparently he went deaf. He put himself in such sakana because he couldn't bring himself to be mechal Shabbos. Apparently he went deaf. That's the story. So obviously, in that situation, you're talking about a lo sase, even though it's only drabanan, it's muktzah. We're not talking about a mitzvah sase. Tonight we're going to focus more on the mitzvah sase. I remember when I was in Rav Shechter's shir, he used to invite the whole shir over on Chanukah to his house. So one Chanukah, he was talking about, for some reason, I don't know how he got onto it, we were talking about the Stipler and what Rav Shechter's experiences with the Stipler were. And Rav Shechter loves the Stipler Svarim. He thinks his Svarim are phenomenal, and we all love the Stipler Svarim. If you learn a Masechta and you read through the Stipler Svarim, first of all, they're very easy to read. Unlike a lot of the Lamdash Svarim, written very, very clearly, not particularly concisely, but that's what makes it easy to read. You can just read through it, and it flows beautifully, and the Lamdash is pure and perfect. Very, very nice, nice Svarim. And Rav Shechter had mentioned that he was very disappointed right after the Stipler was Nifter in the Hespedim that people were giving for the Stipler. That a lot of the Hespedim were about some of his, if you call his eccentricities, meaning some of the fact, you know, he was a very intense personality, and he took upon himself certain chumras that were not particularly normal for a normal person, and not something that a normal person can really relate to. He was an extremely intense person. And Rav Shechter thought that that perhaps the people who were closest to him couldn't be maspid karotli because they were so caught up in the pain of what they lost that they were telling stories like these that aren't really the stories that we should be hearing. I mean, he thought that that story was a terrible story because he said the fact that he lost his hearing was megala, that he made the wrong call, he made the wrong decision, that he mamash put himself in a sakana. For what? For an issur drabanan? You put yourself in a sakana? That's not the proper thing to do halachically, technically halachically speaking. Obviously, you know, it's an impressive story, no doubt, the amount of mesiras nefesh. But to what extent does one actually have? Rav Shechter thought that a better way to be masculine was just talk about his learning. What an unbelievable gone in learning he was. But I don't want to get into the Stipler's life story and everything right now. But the point is that there is obviously some limit to what a person has to do in order to be mekayim mitzvos. What is that limit? Like, intuitively, we would know that if the coat was hanging on the tree on Shabbos and we were going to go deaf in the cold Russian winter night, probably we should take the coat off and put it on and save our lives. So even if we didn't think we were necessarily going to die, but we were going to get very, very sick to the point that one is going to go deaf, so likely, at least, one could violate the Yisud Rabbanan of Muktzah in that situation. But what about to be mekayim the mitzvah saseh? What if a person is sick and finds great difficulty in being mekayim the mitzvah? So if you look, the first source I want to take a look at is source number 29. The shach in Yerideas in Kuflun Zayin Sifkat and Gimel v'lo yavelo saseh, says the shach, avol mitzvah saseh afilu mitzvah overes ein sarach levaz v'yizyosu nichomesh. For a mitzvah saseh, even if it's even just a passing mitzvah that you're not going to have an opportunity to do later on, you don't have to spend more than 20% of your money. That's our rule. K'mosh kasav Rav Baruch Chaim in Tovrei Shem Vav, like Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Aruch Chaim in Hilchos Sukkah. So we discussed all that. Now adds the Shach. V'im yesh sakana sever. What if it's going to be an issue of a sakana sever? You're going to lose your hearing. You're going to lose a finger. You're going to lose an aver. Sarach ilni dami lemamon ol nefesh. He says, I'm not sure, is that called sakanas nefashos, or is that called losing money? Meaning, what category does that fit under? If it's called losing money, so then how much money is it called losing? Is it like losing all of your money? Or is it like losing less than 20% of your money? I mean, would you have to give up sakanas eiver to be a mekayim mitzvah sasei? Now, the shach's not really mesupik about the mitzvah sasei, he seems more mesupik about the lo sasei. Right, for mitzvah lo sasei, he's going on with Shulchan Aruch says, you don't have to give up your life in order to avoid violating mitzvahs lo sase, even for a lo sase. You don't have to give up your life unless it's one of the big three that you do have to give up your life for. But the shach says, but I'm not sure, do you have to give up a limb? So probably one would assume, yes, it's not your life. So the shach says, it's somewhere in between money and life, but we're not exactly sure where to put it. Where do you put illness or losing a limb or something of that nature? And the truth is, when it comes to money, it's much easier to quantify. You can say something like chomesh, 20%, because money is a quantifiable entity, and therefore you could just divide it into 20%, 50%, whatever you want to divide it into. But when it comes to illness, discomfort, pain, things like that, you can't really easily quantify what level of pain one would need to go through. For instance, we all know, let's say some people just don't like loud noises, it annoys them to hear loud noises. So it's uncomfortable for a person to hear loud noises. Would anyone have a havamina that he's parted from the mitzvah of shofar because it's uncomfortable for him? No, that level of discomfort, if you just don't like it, you don't like sitting at a chasna near the speakers, or these days at chasnas anywhere in the place where it's always very, very loud. So you don't like sitting in the room, so you don't like loud noises. So it's that level of discomfort, one would imagine, you would have to go through. So where do you draw the line? Obviously, there's a big difference between that and going deaf. Right, so where exactly do you draw the line is very complicated, and that's perhaps why it's not abundantly clear in halacha. But what I want to take a look is a bunch of sources that I actually did not put into the Mar Makomos, because oddly they were not in my brother's sefer. I'm not really sure why he didn't include them in his sefer, but I'll write him a letter. But I think the only people that still write letters are Talmidei Chacham, when Rabbanim deal with shailos and tshuvas and things like that, because you have to have a record for a tshuva to be written, so that there could be what to learn later on. Anyway, so the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach, again, it's not, I don't believe it's in the packet, but the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach is in the Tuf Ayin Beis, Se'if Yud writes as follows: Mi she'eino shose yayin mepnei shemaziko o sono. Let's say a person doesn't drink wine because it damages him or he hates it. Sarich lidchok atzmo v'lishtos l'kayim mitzvah sarba kosos. Needs to push himself to fulfill the mitzvah of dalat kosos. Drink wine anyway. Some people say, I can't drink wine, I don't like it, it gives me a headache, I don't enjoy it. Nevertheless, says Shulchan Aruch, you drink wine anyway for the mitzvah of dalat kosos. Now, how much alcohol does the wine have to have? This is a discussion in the poskim. I believe Rav David Feinstein in his Haggadah writes that, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't seen it recently, but I think he writes that it just has to be enough that you can sense that there's some alcohol in there. Meaning it doesn't have to be 10%, 12% alcohol. As long as it's a 5% is fine also. As long as you can sense that there's some alcohol in it. But nevertheless, Shulchan Aruch says you do have to push yourself, even if you're going to get uncomfortable. Where does that come from? So it actually comes from a Gemara that I do think I have in the packet over here. If you look in source number 32, the Gemara Maseches Nedarim Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis. Amra Hahi Matronisa L'Rabbi Yehuda. A noble woman, came and saw Rabbi Yehuda, and apparently Rabbi Yehuda was a robust, healthy-looking individual. And she looks at Rabbi Yehuda and she says, interesting, Marav Ravi? You're a rabbi and you get to enjoy the good life. You seem to be pretty healthy and looking pretty good. for a rabbi. What's going on with you? So, I mean, you're drunk also? You drink a lot too? So, Amrullah, so he said, it's similar to what we had in this morning's Daf Yomi. The Gemara says in this morning's Daf Yomi that Klal Yisrael, the Gemara didn't actually say, the Gemara says that the Pasuk, quotes the Pasuk, that Klal Yisrael looked at Moshe Rabbeinu until he went back to his tent. And the Gemara says that some darshan that l'ganai and some darshan that l'shvach. Some view that as a very negative thing and others as a positive. So the Gemara says, those that view as a negative, you know what it is. And the Gemara doesn't explain. Just says, yeah, you know what it is. You know what the negative thing is. And those that darshan for a positive assume that they would stand up and they refuse to sit down until Moshe Rabbeinu would get all the way to his tent because they had so much covered for him. So what did they mean when it said, you know what it is? You know what the negative thing is? So Rashi says that the Medrash, Rashi quotes the Medrash, that the negative way to view that pasuk is that people would watch Moshe Rabbeinu walking from behind and say, look, he looks pretty fat. He looks pretty, you know, look at the thickness of his neck and his thighs. He seems like he's eating pretty good. I wonder where he must be making a pretty good living off of us. And they would criticize him in that way, right? And Rashi says that the Gemara doesn't want to quote that because why should we repeat Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi quotes, right? But at least it's not in the Gemara. We don't want to repeat Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. But that criticism of Rabbanu, I mentioned this morning in the Daf, Shor Mitzion Balacha says that maybe the reason that Rashi quotes it is that because it's important for Rabbanim to see that. I mean, why is it important for Rabbanim to see that? He says, a rabbi sometimes thinks when he's criticized that he's the only one that was ever criticized. And that they must hate me and I'm the worst rabbi ever because I get criticized. So it's nice to see Moshe Rabbeinu was criticized too. That they would talk behind Moshe Rabbeinu's back also. Gives you a little bit more confidence and comfort in the criticism. But anyway, going a little far afield over here, going back to us, so the Gemara says that this woman came over to Rabbi Yehuda and says, you drink a lot. You look like you're a drinker. So what does Rabbi Yehuda respond? Amar la himnusa biyada dayitza. Trust me. Ita imna ela kiddusha va'avdalta va'arba kasi depischa. You know when I drink? Kiddush, Havdalah, and Dalit Kosos on Pesach. And not only that, the Chogarni Tzidi min Pesach Aratzeres. And the Chogarni Tzidi, Rashi says it means I had to tie something around my temples because I had such a horrible headache from Pesach all the way until Shavuos. For 7 weeks after the night of the Seder, I had headaches because I would drink Dalit Kosos. That's how not used to wine I am. So don't think it's because I'm a big drinker that I look like this. Why do I have this shine, this glow to my face? So he says it's enough in a pasukim kohelas, chachma sadam tayir panav, that a person who has a great deal of chachma, so his face shines, so to speak. So he says, that's why I look so shiny, that's why I look like, I look so good. Not because of my drinking, but even though it's not the point of the Gemara, but what do you see from that Gemara? That incredible discomfort he went through. In order to drink Dalit Kosos on Pesach, 7 weeks of headaches, 7 weeks of having what sounds like a migraine, right? It sounds like really terrible headaches in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Dalit Kosos. So from that Gemara, it seems that one does have to get sick, mamish, that you need to get sick in order to be mekayim a mitzvah saseh. However, if you look in Mishnah Brura on that halach in Shulchan Aruch that I mentioned before, that you have to push yourself to drink Dalit Kosos, says in Mishnah Brura, he says, no, you don't have to get sick. You have to get uncomfortable, a headache, but to really get sick, meaning to be laid up in bed, that you don't have to do. To get sick from drinking the Dalit Kosos, that far you don't have to go. So to be Mekayim a Mitzvah, if you know the only way you're going to be Mekayim a Mitzvah Saseh, is by getting sick for being Mekayim a Mitzvah Saseh, so you're Pater from the Mitzvah Saseh. That's what the Mishnah Berurah seems like he's saying. Or at least he's saying you're Pater from Dalit Kosos. So I thought it was, this can be applied globally. You're Pater from the Mitzvah Saseh, right? However, then I saw in the footnote in the Sharat Ziyun, in Osnan and Bez over there, he says, Kanal Pashut, that's what appears to me Pashut, it's obvious that that's the case, that that you don't have to get sick. So I thought he was going to say, because it's only Mitzvah Saseh, if you don't spend 120% of your money, you don't have to get sick. But then he adds in a few words, De'in zed derech cheirus, because the way that you're supposed to do Dalit Kosos is with a sense of cheirus. And you're not really doing Dalet Kosos with a sense of Chavrus if you're getting sick from it. You're getting a headache from it, apparently that's okay. That's still within the threshold of Chavrus. That could still be called Chavrus. But you're going to get really sick from it, that's not called Chavrus. So it's not called Derech Chavrus to get sick. So if that's the case, if that's the real reason, so then it seems that the Pesach of the Mishnah Berurah is limited to only Dalet Kosos, where you need Chavrus. But any other mitzvah where there's no such requirement of chayrus, there's no such din that you need to feel a sense of chayrus when you're blowing shofar, when you're taking luv and esrog, when you're out in sukkah, doesn't seem that there's any such din of chayrus when it comes to these issues. So the chora one would get sick. Sukkah is a bad example, obviously. The sukkah is alacha cholo mishamshav. The Mishnah says in sukkah that a chola is pater from sukkah, and those who are helping the chola are pater from sukkah. So sukkah is a poor example. But I'm saying any other mitzvah would seem that. And the reason a chola is pater from sukkah, it seems, is that it relates to teshuv kein tadur. That the mitzvah to live in sukkah is to live in sukkah like you would in your house. Now, if your heat broke in your house and you get sick, if you stayed there, you'd probably sleep by someone else's house until the heat got fixed. So if a person is going to get sick from going to the sukkah, so then he's pater from going to the sukkah. But that's a unique thing within sukkah. But in terms of all other mitzvahs, it sounds from that Shaar HaTzion, Dalet Kosos, you don't have to get sick for, because that's not Derech Chavrus. But other things you would have to get sick for. So I was going to leave it at that. That's what it seemed to me that the halacha would be, as troubling as it was. But then I came across a very short tshuva in Igros Moshe. And again, I apologize, not in the Mar Mekomos, but in the first volume of Igros Moshe, in Chelik Aleph, Farach Chaim, Simon Kuf Ayin Beis, he writes, Nish'alti Be'echad, I was asked about a guy, Shayachola B'machlas, I don't know, Shin Tes Vav Tav, anyone know? He had some sort of illness. V'hu bebeis hacholim, and he was in, doesn't seem like it was a mental illness, it was a physical illness, and he was in the hospital. V'nirpa, and he was on the road to recovery, he was better. Aval harofim omrim, but the doctors told him, shetzarech liyishar sham od eze shavuos tachas hashkachasam, that he needs to remain there for a few weeks, under their observation, k'deish lo yiskalkel chas v'shalom, because it's still iffy. He's better. He feels good, but they need to keep him for observation. They don't want him to. They're nervous if they let him go that he's gonna get sick. So im tzrichem lo tzio misham k'deish yikayim mitzvah shofar shabes achol mi'efshar. For whatever reason, it was impossible to do the mitzvah of shofar in that hospital. There was no one nearby, no one that was going to come to blow the shofar for him. So he wanted to know. I have a mitzvah sasei d'oraisa, the mitzvah of shofar. I feel fine. What? Because the doctors are worried I'm going to get sick. They're not worried I'm going to die. If they're worried he's going to die, then it's a no-brainer, obviously. They're worried he's going to get sick, and he'll have to be in the hospital for another couple of weeks to get him better. But they weren't worried he was going to die. So is he allowed to go, and does he have to go and hear shofar? So again, based on the Mishnah Berurah we saw, by Dalet Kosos, you don't have to get yourself sick. Why not? Because it's not Chayrus. But then there's no din that shofar has to be Derech Chayrus. Says Rav Moshe Veishavti Shela Anias Daiti Ein Tzrichim Lahotzio. He says, according to in my opinion, they do not have to take him out of the hospital. Ki al asay gam onus mamun yosem yichovish nechshav onus lepotro. When it comes to mitzvah sasei, even spending 21% of your money is considered too much and not beyond what you have to do. And therefore, you're putter from a mitzvah if it's going to take more than 20% of your money. And he says sometimes even less than 20%, and he gives some armakamas to look at in Dibros Moshe or whatever. Not going to get into that, but he says if spending a little more than 20% of your money is going to make you putter from a mitzvah, so he says logic. Kol shkein zesha adiv la'adam af michomesh mamon v'yoser, meaning your health. I would imagine a person would be willing to give up 20% of his money to remain healthy. The health is more valuable to the person than his money. If a person is sick, what would they spend to get better? Right, a person is sick, and if they don't get better, they're going to die. But if they can get better, they can pay for a fool. What would you pay to get better? So one would imagine you pay whatever it takes, whatever you got. People go broke trying to pay for medications, trying to get better. So Rav Moshe says it's worth a lot more than 20% of your money. For sure, let the guy out of the hospital. So Rav Moshe seems very clear on this, that you don't have to get yourself. You don't have to get yourself sick, because he seems to assume that health is more important to us than money is in general. that, and therefore, if you don't have to spend more than 20% of your money, then you don't need to, then you wouldn't need to get sick either for the purpose of being mekayim a mitzvah. But then I came across, again, also a similar idea, a tshuva of Maram Shik. And again, I apologize, not in Mar Makamos, but Maram Shik has the following shaila, interesting shaila. I think we may have discussed it once, but I don't think we saw this tshuva. Nishalti b'chola, he writes, sha'amalo harofim b'ashara gadola. He was asked by a person who was sick, who the doctors told him, with a very severe warning, shalo yochal matzah maror, that he better not eat matzah and maror. Why? Vim yochal yehe b'sakana gadola. And it's going to be very dangerous for him if he does eat matzah and maror. Now, wait a second, sakana gadola, that's not our topic. Sakana gadola is obvious, right? For sure, you don't eat matzah mar if it's going to be sakana gadola. What's the problem then? So what's the issue? Says Ram Shik, v'achola rotz lahachmir l'atzmo v'leachol. The chola couldn't bear the thought of going through Pesach without eating matzah mar. He said, I want to eat matzah mar. So I know the doctors told me I shouldn't do it, and therefore it's probably aser for me to do it, but I'd rather do something that's aser than not eat matzah mar. I'm gonna eat matzah mar on Pesach. There's no way I'm gonna go through it. So he wants to know when he eats his matzah mar and puts his life in danger. Irashay levarich. Is he allowed to make a bracha on the matzah mar? Is he allowed to make a birchas mitzvah on it? So what's the havamina that he shouldn't? So he says because he's pater. I mean, not only is he pater, it's aser. It's aser for him to eat the matzah mar. He's putting his life in danger, but he's gonna do it anyway. So he wants to know, should he make the bracha on the matzah mar? And he says, you know, after all, it should be just like the discussion we had recently in the Daf Yomi, the discussion about women making a bracha on mitzvah seishas man grama. Does a woman make a bracha on the mitzvah of lulav, on sukkah? So it's a split between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, right? Sephardic women do not, because they can't say, they assume like those Rishonim, that how could a woman say, Asher Kirshanim themselves, vitzivanu? How could they say that God commanded them in the mitzvah, al netilas lulav? God never commanded them al netilas lulav. Therefore it's sheker, therefore they're not allowed to say such a bracha. Whereas Ashkenazim assume like the Shita of Tosfos, that no, vitzivanu means Klal Yisrael. Vitzivanu doesn't mean God commanded me. It's not personal. It's about Klal Yisrael. God commanded us as a nation. And therefore you can make a bracha. So the guy wanted to know. I know I'm pater, but maybe I can make the bracha because I'm Ashkenazi. And as an Ashkenazi, I can make a bracha because Vitzivanu is not, granted, I'm not commanded, but the rest of the world is commanded. Maybe the last bracha I make, right? So he wanted to know if he's allowed to make this bracha. Unbelievable question. So says so what's the tzad to say no? He's Ashkenazi. So he says, the tzad to say you can't make a bracha is it's mitzvah baba aveira. Inza mevarech lemanayitz. That's not someone being mevarech Hashem. That's it's slapping God in the face. It's an aveira for him to be eating, and he's going to make a bracha on Nisr. Right? Eat a piece of chazer and you make a bracha. Right? That's a slap in the face to the Ribbono Shlalom. So the choru belav hachi misafkali. So the Maram Shik doesn't really deal with this question for too long. He says, Pasha deino rashi lechol deino rashi levarich. What are you bothering me? The guy can't eat. He can't make a bracha. He should, you know, he should just get over himself and listen to the doctors. So he sort of just like uses that shaila that he got as a springboard to discuss, you know, a related topic that actually is interesting, because that shaila is, you know, it's fascinating that there's a guy who wants to give up his life to eat matzah, but it's not really interesting halachically, meaning it's obvious that the guy's an idiot. It's obvious that the guy should not give up his life to eat matzah. So says Maram Shik, let me talk about something that's actually interesting. So he says, what I really want to discuss is the following. Im ochel davar shemazik lo lebrius gufo. What if you eat something that's just unhealthy? It's not good for you. Im mikri klal achila. Is that called achila? Now, previously, we thought maybe we had a distinction between the mitzvah of dalet kosel specifically, because it's about cheirus and other mitzvahs. Ram Shik is about to, Rav Moshe did not distinguish. Rav Moshe said you don't have to get sick for any mitzvahs, right? Ram Shik is going to draw the line somewhere else. He's going to say it's not about cheirus versus all other mitzvahs. Dalet kosel, which has cheirus, versus all other mitzvahs. You know where the distinction is going to lie? Between mitzvahs that are a mitzvah of eating or drinking something versus other mitzvahs. Meaning, if hearing shofar is unhealthy for me, like in Rav Moshe's case, so granted, it's unhealthy for me, but is it called a mitzvah of hearing shofar? Did I do tkiyah shofar? Absolutely, I did tkiyah shofar. because that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is hear the shofar, I hear the shofar. But Rav Shik suggests that if eating something is unhealthy for you, it may not be called eating at all. If it's going to be something that's not healthy, then it's, if it's going to be something that hurts you, so then it could be that it's not even defined as an achila. So if the mitzvah is to be ochel matzah, and you eat something that is literally poison for you, because it could kill you, it could hurt, not kill you, but it could hurt you, then maybe that's not called achilas matzah. And you're not mekayim the mitzvah anyway. Where does he get such an idea that it shouldn't be called an achila? So he quotes the following. He says, he quotes a Gemara in Yuma Daf Pei, that im ochel achila gasa o kose saora pater. That if a person eats an achila gasa, a person eats more than his fill, or he chews on something that's inedible, so he's pater on Yom Kippur. He's pater for eating on Yom Kippur. So the big question the Achronim ask is, how do you ever get to Achila Gasa on Yom Kippur? Meaning, how can you be pater? To get to Achila Gasa, you first need to eat a little more before. So it has to be that you really fill yourself up right before Yom Kippur, and then, you know, Kol Nidre, boom, and you start... you know, packing more in at Kol Nidre, and you fill yourself up. So you're eating like a chaya. You're eating well beyond a healthy dosage of food. You're going to get sick from it. So the Gemara says that you're pater. It's not called achila on Yom Kippur. Tosos points out there's a stira, because it's elsewhere the Gemara says by achilas karban Pesach. I think the Gemara says that if you eat where's the Gemara? Nazir, I think. Nazir Lamed Gimel, I want to say, but I'm not 100% sure. Where the Gemara says that if you... Chaf Gimel. I don't know, but the Gemara says that if you eat Karban Pesach, Bachila Gasa, I think the Gemara says that Mitzvah Min HaMuvkar he didn't do, but Mitzvah Mi HaAvid. But at least he did the Mitzvah. Maybe he didn't do the Mitzvah Min HaMuvkar, he didn't do the Mitzvah in the best way, but at least he did the Mitzvah. So Tosfos says, wait a second, you mean Achila Gasa is called the Mitzvah of eating Karban Pesach? I thought the Gemara in Yuma says Achila Gasa isn't even called eating. So how could it be? So Tosfos says, Shtei Minei Achilas Gasos. You have to say that there are two types of Achila Gasa. One type of Achila Gasa is, I'm full, but you know what? There's always room for jello. Right? I could always have a little bit more. So that's an Achila Gasa in the sense that I really don't need it, and I'm really not even hungry. It won't hurt me. And then the type of Achila Gasa is still called an Achila. But an Achila Gasa that is well beyond, and it's only going to get you sick, that's what the Gemara Numa is talking about. That's when you're going to be putter. There's a big base halevi on that discussion about Achila Gasa, but it's way too far afield, so we're not going to discuss it. But anyway, so says the Maram Shik, so when you eat an Achila Gasa on Yom Kippur, you're putter. Why? So he quotes the Rambam, Perek Yud of Hilchos Trumos, why? Hovelu mazik l'gufo? Because it hurts you, it's damaging to you. And anything that's damaging to your health is not called an achila. Lo mikri achila v'shtia. So says the Maram Shik, so if you're going to eat matzah, and the matzah is going to be unhealthy for you, and you're going to drink the alakosos, it's going to be unhealthy for you, so you shouldn't be... forget about whether you have to eat it. There's no point in eating it. Meaning normally, let's say a person is... we know you're not chayav to spend more than 20% of your income on mitzvahs. Let's say you spent 25% of your income on a mitzvah. Do you get the mitzvah? Yeah, you get the mitzvah. You did the mitzvah in the end. You didn't have to. You were pater. But did you do the mitzvah? Of course you did the mitzvah. He says, Maram Shik, in this case, I don't think you even did the mitzvah. You're going to eat matzah and it's unhealthy. Even if it's not going to kill you, it's just unhealthy for you. You didn't do the mitzvah because that's not called achila. Achila, by definition, is not something that's going to hurt you. However, he says, wait a second. This doesn't fit so well with what the Shulchan Aruch says about Dalet Kosos. Because what did the Shulchan Aruch say? And even if it bothers you, and it's going to give you headaches, and the Gemara had said it's going to give you headaches for 7 weeks, you still drink the Dalet Kosos. So wait a second. What if it's not called Shtia or Achila, then you shouldn't drink the Dalet Kosos either. So he says, first he suggests one possible answer. He says, Ve'en lomar, don't tell me that the answer is that something that's damaging is not called an achila, mitzvah, if it's not a mitzvah to do. Meaning, why is achila gas on Yom Kippur not called achila? Because you have no mitzvah of achila on Yom Kippur. Adrav, you have an isra of achila on Yom Kippur. So whenever you're eating something that's not a mitzvah, so that's called that it's not an achila, when it's damaging to you. But when it's a mitzvah, maybe the fact that it's a mitzvah, even though it's damaging to you, makes it an achila again, makes it considered as if you're eating again. Why would that be the case? So it's similar to an idea that we have in Hilchos Kashrus, for instance. In Hilchos Kashrus, the halacha is if something is not ro'i la'achila, if something is not edible, it's kosher. Meaning it's not kosher. That's why tam pagum, once something has become a taste, has become spoiled, so even if it's a treif a taste and it goes into your kosher food, it doesn't treif up your food once it's a tam pagum. That's why the first question you get from any rabbi when you call with the kashrus question, when you say the milch spoon dropped into the parv pot with the milch sponge and the fleshig this and right all the permutations of what happened, where most of the time whenever I hear the word parv, I'm like, okay, everything's kosher because something was parv, then for sure it's fine. It was obviously not. But you have all the, what's the first question that rabbi always asks you? When was the last time the spoon was used before this? Was it used in the last 24 hours? Why is that the first question they always ask? Because if it wasn't used in the last 24 hours, by the time 24 hours passes where the tam is trapped inside the kli, we assume that the tam has become pagum, that the tam has become something that's disgusting. So let's say a co-worker buys a cheeseburger and brings it to, I work in yeshiva, but there are some Gaish teachers, and they don't bring, I don't think they bring non-kosher food. Once in a while, we smell some sort of Greek dish, whatever. But generally speaking, they don't bring that. But let's say he brings non-kosher food into the room, and they put it in the fridge. And as things go, and where I work at least, they leave it in the fridge. It stays there till Pesach, when the fridge gets cleaned out again. So I open up the fridge 2-3 weeks later. It's pretty rancid, pretty disgusting. But I really always wondered what a cheeseburger tastes like. And after all, look. It's got to be pugum by now. It's got to be disgusting by now. So am I allowed to eat it? So the halacha is no. Why am I not allowed to eat it? Because the very fact that I'm eating it makes it, it's a concept called achshavei. The fact that I'm eating it shows that I consider it to be worthy of eating. And if I consider it to be worthy of eating, it now becomes a food again for me. Even though if it were to drop into my chicken soup and give tam into my chicken soup, since it's a tam pugum, it wouldn't trafe up my chicken soup. Right, it wouldn't ruin any of my food. But if I eat it, so I'm showing that I want it, that I'm treating this as a food. That's the concept called achshavei. Right, that's the discussion when it comes to non-kosher medications and things like that. Is there such a thing as achshavei by things that really aren't edible, that are nifsal me'achila, but you ingest? So that's what most poskim say. If you swallow something, so it's not really, if you don't chew on it, you swallow it. So you can't, it's not even a discussion because you're not eating it. You're not taking it b'toras achila. It's just, it's not even derech achila. You're just swallowing it down, so then it wouldn't be a problem. But anyway, Maram Shik is saying something similar. He's saying maybe when it comes to a regular achila gasa, it's not called eating. It's just disgusting. I'm just getting myself sick with food. But maybe the fact that something's a mitzvah, we see state of mind matters. And how important this food is to you matters. So maybe when something's a mitzvah and I eat it, even though it's an achila gasa and I'm stuffed and it's only going to get me sick, but since it's a mitzvah to eat, it's achshavei, it's like achshavei, and I value this as real food, and therefore it's called an achila. So maybe that's why by Dalet Koso Shulchan Aruch says, get yourself sick. But when it comes to eating an achila gasa and Yom Kippur, you can be patur because it's not called achila. That's what he suggests as a possibility. But then he rejects that possibility because he has a Farish Gemara against it. Okay, so that's not the answer to this stira between Achila and Yom Kippur and the drinking of Dalet Koso. So what is the answer?
For Yom Kippur, Achshavei wouldn't make it like an Achila also, if we're making Yom Chayev? In other words, if you keep eating on Yom Kippur, it's Achila's Gasa.
It's a, right.
Still...
Right, so, right, he's not really using Achshavei in its classical sense, because if he were, then you're right. The fact that you're eating it makes it considered an Achila. Achshavei generally, and this is why it's really a misplaced Achshavei generally is about something where the heftz of the item itself is not royal achila.
Right,
and your eating it shows that you view it as food, that you like it. So that's normal Achshavei. Over here, it's you that's not royal to ingest something, meaning the food is perfectly fine, but you're either totally full and you're overdoing it, you're just not ready to ingest something. So it's a different kind of akshave. So he was suggesting that maybe there's such a thing as an akshave of the fact that there's a reason why you would want to, even though you're overdoing it. Maybe that makes it an achila again, because you would want to do it for a mitzvah. So since there's a reason for it, maybe that would be called an achila. He rejects it anyway. But you're right. It was a good point. It's not the classic. It's not the classic akshave by any stretch. But then he suggests. He says, I have the real answer. He says the real answer is as follows: V'nira dehad matinam ki yochel prat l'mazik. That which we say that when something damages you, it's not called eating. Haynu imhu mazik lo miyad b'shas achilaso v'shtiaso. There are a lot of foods out there that when you eat them, they're delicious. And an hour or two later, you pay the price. Right? You know, it's not. You ever have really good bad Chinese food? Right. So that's when you eat it, it's delicious, it's fantastic, and then you're sick for like the rest of the night. So and you regret it the rest of the time. So says Ram Shik, that's the difference. If at the time that you're eating it, you're already feeling sick, so that's not called an achila. That's an achila gasa. But if it's something that it'll take a while until you feel sick, you'll enjoy now, and then you'll feel sick later. So he says that is called an achila. So he says the case in the Shulchan Aruch with drinking the wine on Pesach has to be that you don't get sick immediately. Now, note, obviously, the Maram Shik was written before the Mishnah Berura. Mishnah Berura was bothered by this kasha, obviously. How did the Mishnah Berura answer the kasha? Mishnah Berura said, no, Shulchan Aruch's not telling you to get sick. He's just telling you to get a little headache, whatever. You don't like it, you don't enjoy it. But he would never tell you to get sick. You need chayrus when you drink the wine. Maram Shik didn't think of that. Right? So the Maram Shik says, no, the Shulchan Aruch is telling you to get sick, but only if the getting sick is going to happen after some time. It's not going to happen immediately. And again, just to come full circle, where did this whole discussion start? It started with the story of Rabbi Yehuda, not Gemara, when he was accused of being a drunk because he looked so robust and so healthy that he would push himself to drink four cups of wine. The other question on that Gemara, just to get back to that Gemara, the other question, big question that people ask on that Gemara is, what did he say? He said, I only drink wine at Kiddush, Havdalah, and Dalet Kosos, and even when I do that, it gets me sick, right? So, Dalet Kosos, I understand. There's no other way to do it. You have to drink it. You can't be Yotzei through somebody else. What do you have to drink his own Kiddush and Havdalah wine for? He couldn't have someone else. He didn't know anybody else who could make Kiddush and Havdalah for him. We have an idea of Shomea Ka'ome. You don't have to make your own Kiddush. Adrabba, we've discussed in the past, the discussion in the Achronim, Machlokas Achronim, if you're invited to someone's house and they offer you to make your own Kiddush, so Rav Schefter likes to quote that it's better not to make your own Kiddush. I think Bir Lacha says that it's better not to make your own Kiddush. Better to be Yotzei with him. Why? Rovam Hadras Melech. Better to be Yotzei as one large group than to divide up into little groups and each make your own Kiddush. So better to be Yotzei with one person making Kiddush for everybody. So there's no chisaron in Kiddush when you have someone else make Kiddush for you. Or so it seems, right? There shouldn't be any chisaron in Kiddush when you have someone else make Kiddush for you. So what do you have to bother himself to drink his own wine for Kiddush and drink his own wine for Avdallah? If he didn't like it, let someone else do it. Yeah?
He answers it himself. Because he said he only gets a headache when he drinks four cups of wine.
Ah, very good. So I thought that was Pashup Shah. I saw that kasha. I said, look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, I drink Kiddush, Havdalah, Dalet Kosos on Pesach, and I get sick from Pesach till Shavuos. He didn't say I get sick from Friday night to Shabbos, or till Tuesday every week. He said he gets sick from Pesach till Shavuos, four cups of wine. There are plenty of people that can handle a sip of Kiddush, but four cups of wine are a little too much for. I'm one of them. There are plenty of people that their limit is somewhere in between two sips and four cups of wine. So, it's a logical thing. I didn't think the kasha was much of a kasha. However, my brother pointed out, just to mention the answers that are out there, as we've been learning my brother's Sefer, Nasiach B'chukecha, which is all about the klalim of all the different mitzvos. So shortly after he published this Sefer, a friend of his sent him in the mail a Sefer, a different Sefer, and he opened up the mail, and it was a Sefer written by the Aderes, of Cook's father-in-law, I think. The Aderes lived in the early part of the 20th century in Eretz Yisrael, and the Aderes wrote a sefer on the klalim of mitzvos and analyzing each of the klalim of mitzvos. And my brother said he wanted to cry, you know. He opened up the book, he's like, well, what did I just spend all my time writing? You know, the Aderis wrote something, he's a little bit bigger than me, what was I doing? Then he saw the Aderis is much more pilpul, not so direct in Islam. It's a very different style, obviously. But in that Sefer, so he was intrigued, so he opened up the Sefer and he was reading it, and he said that in that Sefer, he writes some Ha'aros on Chayyadim Klal Samaches, which is what my brother Sefer is all based on, and he explains as follows. The Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia on Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph says that a Talmud Chacham should make, or can be interpreted to be saying, the Sman Chosh Mishpat interprets Gemara Bava Metzia as saying that a Talmud Chacham should make his own Kiddush and not be Yotzi with others. Dafka a Talmud Chacham should make his own Kiddush. Now the Magen Avraham doesn't understand why. Why would a Talmud, why not? If anyone else can be Yosef Shemei Kona, why should a Talmud Chacham not be able to be Yosef Shemei Kona? So we don't understand why, but apparently there is this idea, the smart quotes based on the Gemara Metzia, that a Talmud Chacham should make his own Kiddush. Ah, so the Aderis says being Yosef from someone else is the Aderis suggests that what's the reason? Because when you're Yosef from someone else, it's like that other person is your shaliach to do the mitzvah. And generally, the halacha is mitzvah bo yosem yibeshlucham. Better for you to do a mitzvah yourself than to send a shliach to do the mitzvah for you. Meaning, even things that shliach works for, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, we'll get to it soon in the Daf Yomi, because we learn shlichus and meseches Kiddushin, right? We learn from Karm Pesach, but the Gemara in Kiddushin discusses it when it talks about a husband sending someone else to be Mekadesh's wife for him. So the Mishnah says, yeah, it works, you can do that. Not advisable, though. Not only not advisable because it's not no way to start a marriage by being Mekadesh wife through a shliach, but also not advisable halachically. Because mitzvah bo yosem yibeshlucho. Better for a person to do the mitzvah himself than to send a shliach. So he said, and that deres with the scharifa says, if you look in the Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Mem Beis, when it talks about a Talmud Chacham making Kiddush for himself, who's the author of that statement? It's Rava in the Gemara Bava Metzia. And Rava is the same one in Kiddushin who coins the phrase, mitzvah bo Yosem Yibishlucho. So it's Rava Lishitaso, that he views when someone else makes Kiddush for you and you're being Yosef Shemei Kohona, that person is your Shliach, and therefore it's better for you to make your own Kiddush. So the Aderis goes so far as to say, perhaps if your only choice is to be Yosef Kiddush with someone else or make your own Kiddush on Challah, maybe it's better to make your own Kiddush on the Challah, because Mitzvah Bo Yosef Yibishlucho. Obviously, we don't pass like any of that, though. Meaning that's a nice charifus, but there's no way we pass like that. First of all, primarily the main issue is that we assume that when you're Yotzi l'shamei ka'ona, that's not shlichus. That's not called that the person is your shaliach. He's when you shamei ka'ona means when you hear the bracha, it's as if you said the bracha. It's as if you are doing it yourself. So it's not a sense of shlichus. It's not that I'm not doing it, I'm sending my shaliach to do it instead. Generally, when it comes to shlichus, I don't have to be there. If it's real shlichus, I just send my shliach does it. Shomei HaKohen, you have to be there. So it's not a real sense of shlichus. It's a totally different thing called Shomei HaKohen. So the whole, it's a charifus de gevart, but the whole vart doesn't seem to be something that we would hold like. But that just to bring it back home in terms of that gemara that we started with. Okay, so we discussed, we have a couple, just another minute and a half, we discussed the how much discomfort one has to go through in terms of doing a mitzvah, and we based our discussion on the psak of the Shulchan Aruch when it comes to Dalet Kosos. It happens to be there are a couple of other sources that relate to how we view pain relative to money, meaning which one is worse to go through, and if you don't have to give up more than X amount of money to do a mitzvah, should you have to give up that amount of pain to do a mitzvah? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, and we're not going to read inside because time is running out, but the Gemara says that you're not allowed to go in front of an Avodah Zarah and pull a thorn out of your side. If there's a thorn that's sticking in your shoe or something, so you can't go in front of the Avodah Zarah and go like that and just pull the thorn out. Why not? Because it looks like you're mishtachavet to the Avodah Zarah. It looks like you're bowing to the Avodah Zarah. Then it says, and if you have money, if you drop money in front of the Avodah Zarah, so you're not allowed to go and pick it up. Let's say people throw money at the Avodah Zarah. That's the way they do it. So you're not allowed to go and just take all the money, and they'll say, oh, it's a miracle the Avodah Zarah took the money. Right? You're not allowed to go do that, because that also looks like you're mishtachavet to the Avodah Zarah, and even if no one's looking, the Gemara says. Because anything that's asur mipnei marasayin, I feel b'chadre chadarim. Anything you're not allowed to do because of marasayin, even if no one's looking, you're not allowed to do it. It's still asur mishum marasayin. So the Gemara says, why would you have to tell me both halachos? Both that you're not allowed to pick up the money and that you're not allowed to take the thorn out. Isn't it obvious that, okay, you can't bend down from the avodah zarah? So says Gemara, it's sricha. Tanakot mishum de'efshel lemezel kameyu mishkalei. If it only would have told me the thorn, I would say, yeah, you're not allowed to take out the thorn because you walk three more steps when you're not in front of the Avodah Zarah to take out the thorn. But the money's there. You can't get the money three more steps away. So I would think that for the money, you're allowed to do it. Good. The Itan Amos, why didn't you just tell me you're not allowed to take the money? De Mamona, because that's only money. Avokotz Tetzara Emalo. It says the Gemara, but the thorn in you, that's a tzar. And I might have thought that money you're not allowed to get, and it's not, you're not allowed to look like you're bowing to an avodah zarah. But for pain, to stop the pain, you should be allowed to. So at least over there from that Gemara, it indicates that pain seems to be a little bit worse than spending money. There are other indications in other Gemaras, but again, no time for now. Mitzvah Hashem, next week, we will start a new topic. Still here.